but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Well, I was there. I was there along with 111,015 at Beaver Stadium in Pennsylvania to see what was a pretty compelling football game. Great fourth quarter. The double overtime, fantastic. Penn State fans went from chanting, "Fire James Franklin," to "We are Penn State," to "Fire James Franklin." I want to know what you made of it. Oregon's win. How big was that? What did you make of Dan Lanning, who was emotional after the game? Dante Moore, emotional after the victory. If you are an Oregon fan who traveled to the game, I'd love to get your travel experience. I'll talk about mine coming up. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. We'll talk about the Oregon Ducks' victory. We'll talk about Oregon State's defeat. Are they inventing new ways to agonize their fan base in Corvallis? Special teams blunders again? Two field goals? Oregon State should have beat Houston. Should have been riding high with a win over a Big 12 team that's pretty good. Instead, the Beavers now searching for answers, and their coach Trent Bray saying today, no changes on the staff. He's not going to fire his special teams coach, Jamie Christian. In part, I think there are reasons financial for that. We'll talk about it on today's show. Great guests today. Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz will be with us. We'll also get a national media member who is at the Penn State-Oregon game along with me before that game. Man, was that a long day. Man, was it a long day. And I'm not complaining. I'm not sitting here talking about the labor pains. I'll show you the baby in the end. But I'm here to tell you that, like, it's not the easiest place to get to. Friday's radio show, we had a great show on Friday. I flew across the country after the show. I flew all the way through Chicago into Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Steven, I don't know what you were doing Friday night, but I was settling in my hotel room in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, exhausted. I mean, it is an all-day trip to go west to east, go that far east, from going from Portland through Chicago to Harrisburg. I got in to Harrisburg at right about the time Oregon State was kicking off their game. And, watched Oregon State play pretty well for about 55 minutes of that game and then implode. But then on Saturday morning, I got up early at Penn State because I wrote something, about Oregon State's debacle. Couldn't sleep. I was like, I need to write this. Oregon State fans are going to want to know what I'm thinking about Trent Bray and this Oregon State football program. So I write that column. Then early on Saturday morning, I get up about 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm exhausted, right? Because my body doesn't even know what time it is. It's my body's like 6 a.m. and it's 9. And then I went and had lunch with a Penn State professor who's an old mentor of mine, Peter Bhatia, who is the former editor at the Oregonian, Detroit Free Press, and a guy who is teaching at Penn State now. Bhatia and I had lunch. I caught up with him. It was neat to kind of see what he thought of living in that town and being around the Penn State fans. And then Najee Saker, who is my photographer that was with me on the trip, he's like, hey, let's go over to the Penn State game early. Let's check out the tailgate because they open the tailgate lots at like 9 a.m. And again, I'd love to hear from you if you're a Duck fan and you were there. 503-417-7575. If you're a Duck fan and you just want to talk about Dante Moore, you want to talk about Dan Lanning, I'll take your phone call as well. But we got over to the stadium. And, it's about a 90-minute drive from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to State College. We get over to the stadium area. We park in the parking lot. And I'm immediately struck by how big, how blasted big the parking lots are. It's like three times the size of what you get around Autzen Stadium. And understandably so, because Autzen Stadium's seating capacity is going to be, what, like 58,000, 60,000 when they go standing room only. And at Beaver Stadium, it's 111,000 plus. Now, you're going to hear from people, and you may hear from people who say that the inside of the stadium, not all that nice. A lot of porta potties, the bathrooms, the men's bathroom is just like a trough. It needs a renovation. The place needs a renovation, but it is massive. And the atmosphere there is big. And the tailgate is big. And it is RVs, it is canopies, it is tents. As far as you can see, it is everybody flying a flag. Every one of the tailgates is trying to outdo the one next to it. You got people who've got brought in a live DJ, multiple live DJs as you're walking through the tailgate area. Everybody's got like a full bar. One tailgate had a bartender that was there. Everybody's playing cornhole or watching TV. They have all the early games on. They're watching the morning football games. There are sofas that are set up. It's just a big setup. It's massive. And there's plenty of room there because, you know, for as much as we talk about Penn State as a football school, there's a dairy farm that is, you know, the campus dairy farm is right there and you can smell it not far from the tailgate. And people eventually got into the stadium, but they were out there because game day was around. And, you know, the students are blowing about a 0.15 by the time kickoff happens at 7:30 Eastern time. And everybody was good and liquored up and having a great time. It was a little warm. It was a little sunny. It was a little muggy. But it was a great college football atmosphere in the setting. And I got to say, when I got into Beaver Stadium, it visually bends your mind. It is mind-bending to see 100,000, 111,000 people in one place. It wasn't that loud. I wasn't blown away by the sound. I wasn't blown away by the fans, the noise. Autzen Stadium plays louder to me in many respects than the scene there at State College. And so, but the thing that got me was just the cooperation from fans. That, you know, when Sweet Caroline is played on the PA system, everybody's singing it. When Phil Collins, you know, Something in the Air Tonight is played, everybody's singing and performing it. When Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer comes on, the whole stadium is living on a prayer. It, you know, they're chanting, "We are Penn State." And it's, you know, visually and the cooperation, impressive. The actual acoustics, I was watching the decibel meter on the scoreboard. It was at like 118, 117. I think Autzen's louder. I think Husky Stadium in Seattle's louder. I think the Big House, Michigan's louder. I think the Horseshoe at Ohio State is louder. I don't think it's the loudest college football environment, but it is visually stunning, especially in a whiteout, especially with the fans there. And the Penn State fans, the Penn State fans just want you to have a good time. They're excited that you're there. They keep asking, "Oh, how great is this? Is this the greatest thing ever? Are you having a good time?" Like, they just want you to have such a good time. I find that interesting, that dynamic. But Oregon came out, and I thought Oregon played a great game. I thought Tosh Lapoy and the defense, they were great, particularly in the first half. I thought Oregon and Dante Moore, like, you know, I don't think he was perfect in this game, especially from a passing perspective, but he had poise. He made the right throws and the right play in most situations. He showed a lot of guts. He showed a lot of grit, and you could tell from his emotional reaction after the game that this meant something to him. Dan Lanning, too. Dan Lanning let it brew all week. He was kind of cool on the show, and I had Nate Kruger, who is the great communications executive at Oregon who's in charge of football. Nate Kruger came up to me and said something to me before the game. He said, "Hey, I bet Lanning was great on your show." And I said, "Yeah, he actually was. He was fantastic on Thursday." Then he said, "I could just tell he was in a good mood." And I took it like Lanning's interview on the show. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. It was good. I mean, we had like this philosophical talk about intrinsic versus extrinsic value. We had this talk about, you know, parenting. We had this talk about the duty you have when you have the platform like Dan Lanning has. We had a talk about football to a certain respect, to, you know, just, you know, it, but it was largely just a very easygoing conversation. And I thought to myself, gosh, is this guy going to be okay losing this game? Because I thought Oregon would go into Penn State. I thought they'd have some trouble. And I think quite the opposite. I think it meant so much to Dan Lanning that you could see him after the game. And Steven, I thought you had a great tweet where you were like, Dan Lanning looks like he wants to scream and cry and punch something at the same time. That's the feel he had after the game. And Dante Moore was crying. It meant something to these guys.
It really looked like he wanted to fight somebody, John. I also thought he wanted to hug somebody. It was a lot of emotion, but it was pure passion. And that's what I loved about it, John. It was, you could tell he cared about it and he cares about the game of college football. And it all kind of just exploded with that one moment. It was so cool to see. Yeah. And it makes you just like Dan Lanning as a person, you know, football coach, whatever it is. But as a guy, like, he loves what he does and he loves his team.
I want to go to the phone lines. Duck fans, Beaver fans, the forum is open. You want to talk about Trent Bray in Oregon State? You want to talk about Dan Lanning in Oregon? 503-417-7575. Bruce in Portland's going to lead us off. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Yeah, John, thank you. A couple things. Watching the Beaver game Friday night, just watching them shoot themselves in the foot was so disappointing. You know, it's just they had that one. But you're right on that atmosphere of Penn State, man. Just from watching it from the TV and watching the whiteout, and everybody's in white, it was crazy. Bunch of us were trying to go to that game, but you're right. The logistics just couldn't work out. You know, it was crazy.
Tough place to get to.
Airbnbs were like $1,000 for one night. You know, it's just like, no, I don't think so. We'll have to pass on this one. Yeah. But Oregon, man, what a solid performance all the way across the board. The D showed up. You know, they stopped that run game after getting torched last year in the Big Ten game, but they held them to like 60 yards total or something like that. And everybody, you know, around me knew Alara was going to make a mistake. You know, he should have been picked a couple times earlier in the game. You know, he finally did in that overtime on an ill-advised throw. But my hat's off to the Ducks. That the running back room is full. I mean, they it all means nothing, though, unless they do something in the playoff, provided they get that far. Yeah. A huge game coming up with Indy, you know, in a couple of weeks. Thank God that one's at Austin. You know, we're going to have a couple of Heisman candidate quarterbacks playing against each other. I personally think game day might try and make it out here for that, but we'll see. My hats are off to the Ducks and the poor Beavs, man. Sorry, you guys. Yep. Just that play calling in the overtime was just atrocious. And I'll sign off on that.
Yeah, it to me, you know, Oregon State blew a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. So did Oregon. And I was I got to be honest, I was sitting in the press box watching it unfold at Beaver Stadium in Pennsylvania, and I was going, not both of these teams on the same weekend.
Well, how shocking was it that Penn State tried to pass in that second overtime? They were running on Oregon the fourth quarter.
It surprised me. Both defenses played so good in the first half. It was like a tug of war. And it wasn't until about 9 minutes to go in the third quarter that anybody got in the red zone. Neither team was in the red zone in the first half. I was looking at the halftime stats, and I was like, red zone trips 0-0 on both sides. And I was like, wait a minute. And then I looked and I was like, the nearest to the goal line that either offense got was like the 30 yard line. And it was like, wow, like these two defenses are just, you know, they came to play. And then what happened in the second half, I thought Penn State's defense broke first, of course. They looked like they had been on the field too long. And Oregon was starting to chop and chop and chop. And I thought they're going to break through. And I just don't think Penn State can score with them. But to Penn State's credit, they found a way to get a couple of late scores, tie the game, and I thought if Oregon loses this thing in overtime, and when Penn State took the lead in the first overtime, I went, oh boy, you're going to have to, like Dan Lanning's going to have to talk about blowing a lead in the fourth quarter, what went wrong, Tosh Lapoy. But to Oregon's credit, so much resilience, the ability to come back, and then, you know, not enough gets made of this, that, you know, Oregon tries to go for two, and Penn State almost returns that two-point attempt the other direction for points. If that had happened, and then all Penn State would have needed to do was score, they would have won the game. Like, you know, people are like, why are they running it back? I'm like, they can get points on that play. And then they get the ball. I want to go to the phone lines. Cam is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Cam, you're on.
Hey, thanks for letting me call in, John. For the Beavers, the show's it's getting old. I think to make a pun here, the dam broke in the press conference after the game. Somebody asked Coach Bray whether or not he liked being or wanted to be a head coach, and he said, next question. And I don't know, it just really spoke to me. Like it seemed like a moment to me. For the Ducks, how great was that? How great was that? And what a nightmare for the Big Ten, because you're making them play seven games where your opponents have more prep time. I haven't heard anybody say this yet, but Oregon is actually playing four games against teams coming off a bye week this season. It's Penn State, obviously, and then Iowa, Minnesota, and Indiana. Indiana actually gets a bye, too, so at least that one's even. But if every team only has two byes a season, who's not playing those extra byes this year? Who's benefiting from that? You got Michigan, meanwhile, refusing to play on a Friday. They're doing everything they can to stack the deck against the Pacific team's favor, and it's just not working. They can't beat us. And if you look at the other sports, much of the same.
If you look at Dan Lanning's comments on Thursday's show, I mean, the national guys picked up on it. They quoted him from this show. They made a big stink about it. I think Dan Lanning was very intentional in what he said about getting a raw deal. I also think he's going to get hit a little bit from some of the other media members, because the idea that they had seven games where they had fewer prep, it's not quite seven. I looked at the schedule. It's more like four. And so, but I think, you know, in Dan Lanning's mind, he's going, seven times we didn't have the prep that the other teams had. It's more like four, but still. Let's go to Roy, who's in Portland. Roy, welcome to the show. Whoops, sorry about that. I got the wrong line. Roy in Portland, welcome. Go ahead, Roy.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Doing okay.
Man, I'm not doing okay, man.
I'm sorry. I thought about you when I saw that Alabama-Georgia score.
You know, it's just like Kalen DeBoer can't beat nobody on the road, but he can certainly beat us. He needs to schedule us. He needs to schedule Georgia for all his road games. I mean, I mean, we can't beat Alabama for some reason, man. I mean, we 0-2 against DeBoer. We never really beat Nick Saban at all. And
is it a Kirby thing, 1-7, or is something going on at Alabama? Because Kirby said, look, Alabama's got a great record against a lot of teams in that stretch.
Yeah, but I don't think it's Kirby. Well, I do kind of think it's Kirby. I think he kind of is in his Mark Richt era. Mm. And, you know, we only beat Alabama four times in 30 years. So, I mean, they something like 11-4 against us since 1995. So, I mean, we just can't seem to beat these guys. I mean, I'm feeling like we back in the era when, you know, with Steve Spurrier and was running all over us, Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow. You know, we had some hard times at Georgia. I mean, before Kirby, we hadn't won a national championship since 1980.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think we're back in that era. But as far as Oregon, man, I'm gonna have to give it up to your offensive coordinator, Will Stein, man, because every quarterback that he has gotten at Oregon, he has made them look better from their previous stop.
Okay.
Like Dante Moore, he made Dante Moore. I didn't think Dante Moore could look like that. You got to credit Will Stein. Same thing with Bo Nix. Same thing with Dillon Gabriel. He makes quarterbacks better, okay, Will Stein does. And his offensive system is amazing. I don't think he's going to be – if the Kentucky job opens up, I think Will Stein is gone. I think Will Stein is a superstar. I don't think he's going to be at Oregon. I mean, this guy's amazing. I mean, I'm looking at his offenses over the years, and he just destroys people.
Yes.
And it just I got Oregon. I'm back on the bandwagon, John. I have to step back again. I got Oregon being the best team in the country, man. They're definitely the best team in the Big Ten. They're going undefeated. I don't see anybody in the Big Ten that could beat Oregon. Maybe Ohio State. I don't see Ohio State beating them, though. I got Oregon going undefeated and back in the playoffs. I mean, they're just rolling right now, and – I don't think Georgia, I don't think anybody in the SEC could beat. Maybe Ole Miss can keep up with Oregon, but other than that, I don't see anybody in the SEC that could beat Oregon.
The physicality is what's different for me. I'm used to seeing Oregon run. We joke that Oregon's got a bunch of gazelles. Oregon's fast. Oregon can play, and they do. Oregon's got fast players on offense, fast DBs. Yeah, Oregon's got speed. But what is different for me in watching Saturday's game at Beaver Stadium is the defensive tackles for Oregon dominated that game. Oregon's interior run defense was fantastic. They won the line of scrimmage. And that is the difference. And we have seen national champions win the line of scrimmage. Ohio State won it last year against Notre Dame. Michigan dominated Washington at the point of attack 2 years ago. That's how you win a title. Oregon has that feel to me. Now, do I want Oregon? Do I view Oregon as a team that is going to go to the national championship game and win it all? I think they have the talent for it. I also know that last season told us it's a long season, 13-0 and a 25-day layoff, got Oregon kicked in the teeth. Do you necessarily want to win the Big Ten championship? I don't know. Does Oregon want to go undefeated? I don't know. A lot of phone calls on today's show. Keep them coming. I want to go to somebody who was at the game. Ryan in Portland was at the Penn State game. Ryan, welcome to the show, man. Tell us what your experience was like being there.
Hey, John, how you doing? Man, it was, I think like everybody, it was a pretty incredible experience all the way around. I've been to, you know, a lot of big sporting events, and just the atmosphere and just kind of everything that goes along with having 100,000 plus people there was just off the charts cool. And so we actually flew out Thursday, and we decided to take direct flight, and Newark was our only option. So we, after a 3-hour delay in Portland, made it to Newark, you know, Thursday night, woke up Friday. We were kind of debating about maybe trying to go to the Ryder Cup or try find something to do. We ended up going to Philadelphia and went to a Phillies game and did some history stuff and woke up Saturday and went down and checked out the Rocky, you know, the Rocky steps and the statue and did that whole thing. And then drove out to Penn State. Nice little three and a half hour drive kind of through Amish country. So it was cool to see, you know, stuff that we don't get to see very often. And, you know, then we get there and it's just, yeah, just like everybody's mentioned, just the tailgate on top of tailgates. And the thing that I was just shocked by was how friendly everybody was, you know, other than the random drunk college kid. I mean, thanks for coming. Have a great time. Enjoy your stay. You know, on and on and on. Just a great experience for us and for our group. And, you know, after the game, everybody, geez, thanks for coming. Congrats on the win. I mean, just off the charts nice, which I don't honestly, I don't know that would be reciprocated at Autzen, to be honest, unfortunately. And then as soon as the game was over, when that thing went overtime, we were getting a little nervous. We had parked about a half hour sort of walk jog away from the stadium, jogged our car, were able to get right out actually. And we drove 3.5 hours back to Newark and had a 6 a.m. flight out of Newark. And I was at my house by 9:30 yesterday morning to watch the end of the Ryder Cup. So just a short, but just a great, incredible trip.
The stadium itself, Ryan, you know, I was in the press box. It's nice up there, but I did hear from some fans that look, hey, that stadium needs kind of a makeover. It visually stunning, not as loud as Autzen for my ears, but tell me what you made of the stadium itself, the amenities, the bathrooms, the concession stands. What did you think of that part of the stadium?
Yeah, you know, I'm not one that gets caught up in all the newest bells and whistles, so definitely it's dated. I mean, I think just the pure size and you know, scope of the building is just pretty incredible. And then you get in for the whiteout deal was off the charts cool. I'm with you though. I mean, we were up in the duck section, which if you saw where the duck section was, it was, you know, it was up there, like altitude sickness up there. And it was really hard to tell how loud it was because where we were sitting, it didn't seem that loud. Mm-hmm. And so hearing that from people that were lower, it kind of confirmed like, yeah, sure felt like Autzen was louder or is louder. And then, you know, the thing I was a little disappointed with was the in-game stuff. You know, Oregon, you've got coming home after the first quarter, you got shout after the third quarter. You know, they played Neil Diamond, but beyond that, it didn't seem like there was a lot of, you know, stuff during the game that was sort of these traditional things like we have at Autzen. So I was a little surprised by some of that, you know, just with the history of Penn State and, you know, how massive the crowd is. I thought their student section was off the charts in terms of engaged and loud, but to be honest, it didn't seem that loud and overwhelming, you know, from where we were.
Yeah, good point. Ryan, I appreciate it, man. On boots on the ground at Penn State, I want your phone calls. Beaver fans, Duck fans, casual observers, 503-417-7575 is the number. Nick in Vancouver, Kyle's in Cottage Grove. They're going to be up next, but you grab an open line. You got the bald-faced truth.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Good Lord. This song stayed in my head into Sunday morning. I'm at my 9-year-old's soccer game, and I've got this beat in my head because Penn State played it throughout the damn game. What is it? Mo Bamba. You can't do the lyrics, can you?
I can. I'd have to really censor that, but yes.
All day yesterday. That's how it sounds like when you're in the press box. And credit to Dan Lanning, who threw some shade by saying it's his new favorite song.
Well, you know, to go to the caller's point, he said they don't have many traditions. Like, that's kind of the one tradition they have now is they play the Mo Bamba song at the start.
Yeah.
And John, to be honest with you, I expected a little more. I expected a little more sound. It did.
Yeah.
Watching it on TV, it didn't sound as loud as I was hoping it would be.
When I went to the Oregon State or the Oregon Penn Ohio State game, the Ohio State game at Autzen Stadium last year in like week 6, I drove home and I went to bed and I can remember my ears were ringing, and I went, man, that stadium was loud. My ears were ringing when I got home. And you know, you go to sleep and your ears are going, you know, like it's. I didn't have that at the Penn State game. It was loud. I'm not saying it was a quiet, like library-like atmosphere, but you could have a conversation there with the person next to you, and you could hear what they were saying. I couldn't do that at the Oregon-Ohio State game, at least the first game. The second game was very quiet at the Rose Bowl, but that to me was interesting, and I thought it's not as loud as Oregon. It's not as loud as Husky Stadium. It's a lot of people, but it's not an echo chamber. Autzen's built like an echo chamber. It's just more enclosed, and the sound seems to stay inside the stadium.
It seemed like it's all about just the look, right? You got 110,000 all dressed in white, and that is the intimidating part. But the noise, I don't think necessarily didn't affect Oregon at all. And I don't think it was that big of a deal, like even watching it on TV. The look of it, where they're waving towels, all that, that's pretty cool. Yeah. But after that, I don't know about it.
I think that whole whiteout thing was overdone, but it was cool. It was cool to see it. Visually stunning. People are asking me, somebody asked me in the Monday mailbag today at johnconzano.com, why didn't Penn State wear white? They had a whiteout. Why didn't the home team wear white? Well, the NCAA rules say that the home team wears dark. The visiting team wears white. Penn State can ask the visiting team at the beginning of the season, hey, can you wear your home jersey? And we'll wear a white jersey for that game. And they have historically requested. But no team in their right mind is going to be like, yeah, go ahead, do that. So, you know, Oregon decided they'd wear white. And, you know, after Labor Day, let's go to Nick in Vancouver. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? I'm a Beaver fan forever, through the hard times and the good times. And there is just something about the last couple seasons that, I'm sorry, that whole program just needs to be scrubbed. It looks like the players don't even want to be there. The coaches don't even want to be there. And it's just like, I can't believe how bad it just looks, the whole program, everything.
I think, you know, when you're 0-5, there's a body language that you can't help. I mean, everybody wants to win games, and I think that's part of it. But I thought Oregon State played really well for about 50 minutes of the game. I didn't like the conservative play calling. They went into a shell when they had a 2-score lead late, and they let Houston get back in the game too quickly. They stopped doing the things that they were doing well to inhibit what the Cougars were doing. And then, give me a break. You got to be able to block a field goal, like block the opposing team on a field goal. If the kicker misses the kick, fine. But at the end of the first half and at the end of regulation, Oregon State had 2 chances to kick field goals and couldn't get the ball past the line of scrimmage. That's embarrassing. I started thinking, is Trent Bray going to fire Jamie Christian? He's decided to stick with him. His reasoning is, he says he feels like, you know, this is for where we are and what we have. This is what's best for the kids. That to me is code from Trent Bray saying we can't afford to fire Jamie Christian midseason and hire a special teams coach. A, the coach he wants may not be available. B, they may not have the money. He may have gone to Scott Barnes, and Barnes says, I don't have the money to pay 2 special teams coaches in the same season.
Okay, but doesn't this show such a lack of investment in the program? I know, yes. I understand that you are coming off the best game of the season against Houston, But the way you lost and the debacle this season has been, some type of change has to happen. The message you're sending your fan base is, look, we don't care. We're just going to let it go status quo. We're going to finish out this season. You're going to have to deal with the horrible play that we've had all season long. I hate the message that they didn't do anything. And I hate the message that Trent Bray didn't do anything about it.
I would have demoted the special teams coach.
They had to do, they have to do something, John.
That's the move that I would have made, but they didn't do it. And so I don't agree with people who think Bray should be fired. Like, there are a lot of media members and a lot of people on social media who are out banging the drum. He must go. There were media members talking about it after week one, week two. You know, I've got a friend who's a media member or a former friend who's mad at me because I said on the radio, you're ignorant if you don't understand why. It's true. Like, think about the grand scheme of things at Oregon State. They went to the state legislature last year, Stephen. They asked for $10 million. They got it. You can't come into this football season, fire your football coach, pay a $3.6 million buyout, then go back to the state legislature and ask for more money. You're not going to get it. The lawmakers are going to go, hey, we gave you money. You used it to buy out your football coach? Like, you can't. So you can't do it. But I agree. Like, I thought the move was get rid of the special teams coach. That's what I thought. Get rid of the special teams coach and hire somebody. But Bray seems to want to show that loyalty. And let's make no mistake. He was a guy who got promoted to D coordinator midseason. If people remember, right. Tim Tibisaar wasn't getting it done. Jonathan Smith said new D coordinator.
It's that or demote Gunderson.
I wouldn't demote Gunderson. I thought the offense was fine. I thought
those play calls in the fourth quarter, John, also was just horrific.
Okay. But if you're going to look at the play call, what's being said from the head coach to the coordinator before that series? That's what I want to know. Right.
But someone has to face the blame. Somebody has to face the blame for what's happened this season.
Because the head coach may have gone to the coordinator and said, we need to shorten the game here, run the football. And if that's the message, I can't blame Ryan Gunderson for calling running plays and going into a shell. If the message is, just go get some points and Gunderson called those plays, and that's a different conversation. But I gathered there was a change of philosophy in that moment, and used to have it. Mario Cristobal used to tell his offensive coordinator.
Arroyo.
Marcus Arroyo. I was just reaching for the name. I'm sitting here snapping my fingers. He used to tell Marcus Arroyo, hey, run the football here. And then we would all blast Arroyo for being conservative. And Arroyo would look at me as he's leaving the press box like he was helpless, like he was in a straitjacket. And I can remember going, this may not be the coordinator. I can tell from Marcus Arroyo's body language that he's feeling frustrated. So we're going to talk to Andy Machado about this all coming up. I want more of your phone calls. Let's go to Mark in Portland. Mark, go ahead. What's up?
Hey, not a lot. It was, a great win for Oregon. The thing that I saw that I haven't seen is the physicality, the way they dominated up front. They stuffed their running game. Especially in the first half, they did get tired and relaxed there in the fourth quarter. But my concern, John, is last year they won a game, although it was at Autzen last year against Ohio State, and celebrated like they won the Super Bowl. What does that win mean today? And that's the leader, Dan Lanning. I'd love to see these guys win a game like that, have a mild celebration and then get off the field. Like it's all about the playoff. They've done everything else. Dan Lanning, since he's came to Oregon, has the best record of any coach in college football. He's only lost three games, two to Washington by 3 points, and then he lost to Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. He's done everything as far as the regular season and all that goes, but they should be thinking about the postseason. I don't really know how it's going to play out as far as the season goes, but, I don't really like the fact that they're playing an extra game in the Big Ten championship, because they look like a favorite to go to that, and they're probably going to play Ohio State, especially if they're undefeated. I would go into that game, and if anybody even has a hangnail, I wouldn't be playing them. I just feel that way.
You don't have to win that game. You don't have to win that game. You got to win You got to win those playoff games. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you on the celebration stuff. Like, you want to act like you've been there but it's kind of the way Oregon plays. And I don't think Dante Moore's tears were about him winning that game and feeling like it was the end of the season. I think the tears that he had on the field were about all that he went through at UCLA and having such a validating moment on the road at Penn State. And I think Dan Lanning is kind of wired on the high end of the scale, where It's just, it matters to him. I kind of think it benefits him that there's a bye week this week because they can regroup. They can kind of settle down and regroup and then figure out what the rest of the season's about. They'll get Indiana at home in a 12:30 kickoff. I got a complaint today that I never thought I'd get. I'll tell you about it coming up. You got the bald-faced truth. More phone calls. 503-417-7575.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Jed Fish, Washington football coach. Steven, did you hear how Fish opened his news conference today?
I did, yes.
He compared Washington, Ohio State to the atmosphere that went down with Oregon and Penn State. He said it was like a heavyweight prize fight, just like the Oregon-Penn State game. You can't do that. You can't just say, oh, you know, this game was like, it was like the game we just lost, you know, but our rival's win was like our loss. Jed, come on. You can't do that. Ohio State and Oregon, to me, feel like they're on a collision path, but Indiana may have something to say about that as they come to Autzen Stadium after the bye week. And that is a 12:30 kickoff. And I teased before the commercial break, I got a complaint today that I never thought I'd see. As part of the Monday mailbag, I had somebody who said, hey, these 12:30 kickoffs are killing me. I never thought I would hear somebody complain about a 12:30 kickoff. It happened in the Monday mailbag today. Basically, what the hell? What is with these early kickoffs? This is too early. And answer to that is CBS TV. Blame TV. TV wanted it for an early window. TV's taking it for the early window. 12:30 kickoff. We have come full circle. The complaint box is now full. No kicking off at 12:30. No kicking off at 7:30. What time do you want the game to kick off? And it got me thinking, like, what is my ideal kickoff time? Well, I prefer a 2:30 or a 3:30. Normal day, easy travel. Nobody's getting home at 2 o'clock in the morning unless you really want to get home at 2 o'clock in the morning. But that's the, you know, basically people-pleasing is a dangerous business. No, I don't like the 7:30 kickoffs. All right, here's 12:30. I don't like the 12:30 kickoffs. But, Dad, I don't like pizza for dinner. We had pizza 2 days ago. All right, let's have a steak. I don't like steak. You know where we're eating? We're eating where I want to eat. That's what TV says. Kyle is in Cottage Grove. Kyle, how's Cottage Grove today?
It's good. I'm actually a pastor, and so I have a wedding to officiate at 12:30 2 weeks from now.
Uh-oh.
So on that Saturday.
Sorry.
So
there you go. You catch the second half.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, but before we get into your football stuff, let me ask you a pastor question.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
I was the honorary officiant at a wedding, and I should have got your advice before I did the wedding. But what's your strategy when you're doing a wedding? What are the basics you give advice-wise to others?
Oh, man. First of all, you got to sit down and talk with the couple for a long time beforehand.
Get to know them.
Especially, I know these two that I'm getting that are getting married here in a couple of weeks pretty well. But, boy, sit down and just get to know them the best you can and kind of just figure out what they want. That's kind of where it's at.
Okay. All right. So you go, you're a people pleaser as well. You're in that business as well. You got to keep people happy. It's their wedding. All right, get to the football stuff. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so there's two major aspects here of this game that I don't think is being talked about enough. Number one, the offensive line had no false starts, no sacks, and look at how they managed the silent count in that difficult of an environment. I was blown away with how Dante Moore handled it and how the offensive line handled it. And that kind of ties into my second point that I feel like a lot of people aren't talking about. Penn State had about 20 players with starting experience coming into the season, coming back. And Oregon didn't have anywhere close to that. But I'm seeing guys like Poncho on the line, DeCorian Moore, D.R. Hill, just tearing it up in this game. And they're so young, playing in such a tough environment, handling it so incredibly well. And the crazy part is they haven't even begun to peak yet. Like, this team is going to get better as the year goes on and on. And, like, look, I've been a fan for 22 years, and it's really hard for me every year because I'm like, this team's getting my hopes up again that this could be the year. But it really, you look at this at a game like this and a performance like this with such a young team, and I'm sitting there going, boy, it's really hard not to think in the next year or two that this couldn't happen. So thanks for the call, John. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you make a good point about the snap count and the way that Oregon handled it. Helmet communication helps. But Oregon did a really good job. And the kids, and I call them kids even though we know they're pros, the kids on the field have just gotten so good, I think, that I give credit, like, both teams, both sides. But I also think it wasn't that loud in there. And I know the NBC broadcast did a poor job of getting you the atmosphere in general. It disappoints me that television doesn't do a better job of capturing atmosphere, because there was a lot of atmosphere at the game. It just wasn't audibly distracting atmosphere. It was mind-bending visually to see 111,000 fans. It was. It just didn't convey. But I had the same thought that the caller had. As I'm driving back, I'm making this 90-minute drive from Harris, from college, State College to Harrisburg, and it's what, 2:30, 3:30 in the morning when I'm making that drive. I have a 6 a.m. flight. I'm not going to bed after the game. Missed a night of sleep. But I had the thought. I said, they're good enough to win it all. Oregon is good enough to win it all. Will they win it all? I don't know. Because last year, they were also good enough. But this team's got a little something extra. And it's not Dante Moore necessarily, but although I think he could be in a big game more valuable than Dylan Gabriel later in the year if he gets the reps and he evolves as he should. Oregon's wide receivers are better. Their backs are as good or better. Their defensive line is better. There are some holes, and you get fooled into it because you have some recency bias. There are some holes here in this team, but I look at Ohio State and Penn State, I actually think that's a really good game with those two teams. And I think Ohio State's got a little more offense than Penn State, but I think Penn State's defense is as good or a little better than Ohio State. I think that is a really good game, Ohio State, Penn State. But to me, it's about Oregon keeping the intensity and focus and playing their best football at the end of the season, because there will be a playoff team if they have two losses or fewer, and it looks like they will. They will be a playoff team. They will go to the CFP. Question is, will they be playing their best football when they get there? Because they were not last season. David is in Astoria. David, what's up?
Hey, John, I love college football, but talk about a roller coaster weekend. First, I've got an Alabama buddy who's a loud, obnoxious homer. And we put a little money on. I was pretty confident that I was going to win with Georgia. Nope, that's not right. Then I watched the first part of Oregon State and then had to go to the shop for a while. And I thought that was going to end up being a real game. And nope. And then Oregon, I thought they had finally got rolling and had that game well in hand. And I was ready to crack a celebratory beer and, but then they pulled it off in full pucker, mode. And, so the day ended well, but maybe you can help me wrap my mind around what the heck happened when they went from 14 up to a tied game in two overtimes?
I think what happened is that Oregon's offense was on the field for a long time against a Penn State defensive front that was wearing out. And I think when Oregon broke through, Penn State's play calling, when it was down two scores, changed. They started taking some chances. They started trying to go down the field. And even though Drew Aller made a mistake in the a double overtime, he made a few throws in regulation that helped. And Penn State started to wear down Oregon's defensive line. I think those defenses were only as good as they could be for as long as they could be. I think at some point you've got good athletes on the other side of the ball. Your defense has been on the field. I was looking at Penn State's defense in the third quarter. They were hands on hips. And I thought Oregon's got them. And I think Dan Lanning thought when he went up 17-3, that was enough. Because I was looking at Penn State going, how do they get to 14? Like, how does that offense get to 14? And turns out they got to 17. And in an overtime period, throw out everything out. I mean, it's playmaker against playmaker. I just felt like the offensive coordinators changed how they were calling. A lot of conservative play calls. James Franklin punting the ball in a situation you might go for it. A lot of conservative play and conservative thinking, very tight thinking in the first half. Both teams afraid to make a mistake. Oregon didn't want to throw a pick, make a mistake. Penn State didn't want to do anything, make a mistake. So everybody's running the ball and kind of doing what you expect them to do, and it was a tug of war in the first half. And I felt like Oregon was the better team at halftime, but Penn State had to be feeling pretty good in a 3-3 game. I thought Oregon's going to score a touchdown and make a big play before Penn State will, and I was right. But I also think you just go into that environment and you got really good athletes on both sides of the ball, and you got play callers who go from calling a more conservative game to maybe opening it up. And then a defensive front that is just, both teams got tired. And I think you can only play defense the way they were playing defense the first half for so long. But man, was it a fun game to see. I hope that translated on TV, but guess what? There is a whole lot of ball to play. We're not even at the halfway point of the regular season, and then there's a postseason. So there's a lot left to talk about, a lot left to think about. We're going to talk about the Ryder Cup. We're going to talk about the Blazers, who held a media day today. We're going to talk about the Beavers and what they can do. We'll talk about Oregon some more. You got the BFT. Leave it right here.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
We're going to play some Punch It audio in this segment. Coming up in the following segment at 4:24, it'll be Angie Machado of Beaver Blitz. And then Jake Trotter of ESPN is going to be joining us at 4:43. Jake Trotter, ESPN. He was at the game. He was in the press box. He'll be joining us coming up at 4:43. So that would be... he's on the East Coast, so that's going to be 7:43 his time.
Pretty late.
How about that? We're going to be getting him at night. ESPN After Dark. I love how everybody's doing that, like... Pac-12 After Dark has turned into Big 12 After Dark. Oregon Ducks After Dark. Weird stuff happening. Oregon State can't make a field goal. We'll talk to Angie Machado about that. Beaver fans are frustrated. Should be 2-3, but they're 0-5. Should they have a should be, like, column in the standings?
No. Please, no.
And by the way, this whole, I got something to say about this tie going on with the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers, the Micah Parsons game, this whole tie thing. I was asked as part of the Monday mailbag today why ties are so unsatisfying. Because it's true. No one likes a tie. People say, oh, it's like kissing your sister. I think it's worse. I think a tie is worse than kissing your sister. Nobody likes a tie. But I went in search of kind of like, why is it that people don't like ties? You have this 40-40 game on Sunday night, and it's a scorigami. For people who don't know what a scorigami is, it's a score that has never before happened in an NFL game. An NFL scorigami, 40-40. There's never been a 40-40 game in NFL history. So people made a big deal about that. The goobers are all like, oh my gosh, it's a scorigami. I don't get into that as much as others. I go, okay, cool. But the other thing is, like, we're getting more ties in the NFL because NFL's changed the rules. The overtime is no longer 15 minutes. It's now 10. Also, the game continues after the first possession score. So, you got this longer period and a chance for the other team to tie it, or a shorter period and a chance for the other team to tie it. So everybody gets a possession. And so you get more ties in overtime. That explains it. But why is it that we don't like a tie? It goes to your brain chemistry. It goes to neurotransmitters. It goes to hormones. Our brains want closure. We do not like open loops. There is a psychological phenomenon that focuses on why humans tend to remember uncompleted or interrupted tasks better than completed ones. It's why when so-and-so doesn't take out the trash, it drives you crazy because you want the loop closed. I want, I feel better if the trash is taken out. Oh yeah, I'll get it after this quarter ends. Oh, I'll just do it myself. Why? Because you need the loop closed. It's the Zeigarnik effect. It literally has a psychological phenomenon name. There is a mental tension that is associated with an open loop, and you dwell on this kind of stuff until you get it resolved. It's why if you're going to bed at night and you say, "Ooh, I have to remember to do fill in the blank before I leave for work in the morning or before I take the kids to school, I need to remember to fill in the blank." Whatever it is that you need to remember to, it stays with you overnight. It bothers you. You tend to think about it. And a lot of us, myself included, I will literally get up. Rather than go to sleep, I'll get up and I'll go, I'll just do it now. Because if I don't do it now, I'm going to think about it all. I'm not going to sleep well. It's going to be on my brain. It's going to be on my mind. It has to do with the fact that humans crave closure and we do not like open loops. As a kid, there was nothing worse than an episode of my favorite TV show, whether it would be Cheers or whatever it was, Seinfeld later, if they gave you that dreaded to be continued at the end of the episode. You always went, oh, man. And, you know, the kids today don't understand because everything's binge watching and the whole season gets released at once. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about back in the day when we had to wait a whole week to get the resolution of that cliffhanger and that episode on Thursday night, must-see TV, to be continued. When you really get into a TV show or a sporting event for the purposes of this discussion, your brain will tell your adrenal glands to release hormones. You get cortisol and you get adrenaline. You're a sports fan. That's what you're getting during the game when you're beside yourself and you're going, it's third down, it's fourth down, look at the stakes, or tied 3-3, ball's in the air. You get cortisol and you get adrenaline. The anticipation of closure is always there. And when you get a resolution, because we know the game's going somewhere, someone's going to win, who's going to win, we don't know, cortisol, adrenaline. And then you get resolution, and your brain gives you a giant dose of dopamine. It's a neurotransmitter, and it feels good. It's literally about drugs, folks. Who shot JR? Who shot JR? Do you remember that? Dallas TV show? Who shot JR? That was a big deal. Went on for like a week. You know, oh my gosh, they left it on a cliffhanger. You had to wait a week to get that answer back in the day. But we knew it's eventually coming. And so your brain goes, I'm eventually going to get that dopamine. And so I'll sit around and I'll wait. And it's very satisfying when you get that dopamine delivery. It's very satisfying. But there's no tuning in next week when you get a tie. 40-40. There's no to be continued next week or an hour from now or ever. It's a tie. And that's why it's so dissatisfying. Because your brain has this open loop. We don't know who won that game. Nobody won it. You're not going to get the eventual delivery of the dopamine for all the cortisol that you suffered watching that game. You know, you're a fan of the Packers, you're a fan of the Cowboys. Nobody's happy with that. And so your brain is going, this is very dissatisfying. I didn't get the payoff. If we're going to see a football game, we would like a winner. Please and thank you. Give us a winner. And we didn't get it there. Packers fans and Cowboys fans both are going, this sucks. We didn't get the payoff. And I think college football in this way, like I know it's kind of zany, Oregon and Penn State. It feels so circumstantial. You know, if the ball bounces the other way, or there's a change of the fumble that wasn't a fumble, or was it a fumble? Was he down? Oregon could have easily lost that game if a play ball bounces the wrong way or a play happens different, right? And so it's very fleeting. But it probably explains, like, as I was kind of researching this, it explained to me why I am so not satisfied when I'm watching youth sports and they don't keep score. And it's always bothered me. Like, why does it bother me that they don't keep score at some youth sports events? Like, when the kids are really little, they'll be like, hey, we're not going to keep score. We're just going to let them play. But in my mind, I'm keeping score, Steven. They're playing soccer. And I'm like, and in the game, I'm like, yeah, it was 7-1. You know? And everybody's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I kept score. It explains to it now, because I'm getting cortisol and I'm getting adrenaline watching my kid play. And I'm going, okay, she needs to play. Like, she needs to play well here. And then the payoff never comes. I never got the dopamine. I don't get the, hey, they won the game, you know, even if it's just in my mind. So a tie, 40-40, I don't like it. I think the NFL should find a way to break the tie. I think it's kind of silly that they have ties in the NFL. Just let them play. Let them play until someone wins. And I know, they're saying, well, we got to keep people healthy. Can't have these players playing, you know, 15 minutes of overtime. But I like how college does it. Eventually, somebody wins the damn game. Force them to go for two. Run two-point plays. I don't care. Charlie is in Vancouver. He wants to talk, and then we're going to get to punch it. Charlie, what's up, man?
First, John, thanks for going all that way to give us the personal environment. That's really cool. We can't get that anywhere else. Secondly, really nice to hear that Penn State fan, and actually just the word fan, people can be not hostile after a loss. That's so incredible to hear, because I was so, so, so disappointed in the crowd at the Ryder Cup. Dude, boo Europe, whatever, but don't get so personal. Don't make it such, I mean, because these same fans who are going after McElroy right and left the whole time, they're going to be cheering him like crazy in 3 months when he's out there, you know, at the Masters or whatever. It's so frustrating to hear our society now in that way. I hate to be old man on the lawn, but it really, really bugged me watching the Europeans. I was actually rooting for the Europeans only for that reason.
Love it. Appreciate it. And the Ryder Cup. How about it being over so soon? Was that dissatisfying? Steven, are you a Ryder Cup guy?
You know, I am not a Ryder Cup guy, really. It doesn't actually affect me, because I feel like it's just a made-for-TV thing in my mind nowadays.
There you go. I think I like that there's some nationalism in it, and they've created something that people care about. I wish the NBA could do that, or Major League Baseball. I guess Major League Baseball has done that with the World Classic, but I wish the NBA could do that and create some nationalism and some pride.
I just feel like it can get really, really nasty really quickly when it comes to that kind of stuff. And so it doesn't do anything for me. Like, I don't hold grudges because someone's European. Like, I'm actually going to root against them because of that.
Well, there you go.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel weird. I like, oh, you're from Europe? No, I'm
Man,
not
to hell with you.
Yeah, I'm not cheering for you.
To hell with you. What did you have to wait for? I would love to know. When I talk about brain chemistry and what people have to wait for, Steven, I got a friend who says, in 1980, I had to wait 3 years to hear if Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's dad. That's pretty dissatisfying. And then, by the way, who did shoot JR? That was before your time, Steven.
Yeah, I don't get that reference.
You don't get the reference?
No.
Okay, so JR was on the TV show Dallas. And in 1980, it was one of the most famous cliffhangers, where you had, at the end of the show's third season, JR was shot by an unseen assailant on the show. The identity was kept a secret. It turned who shot JR into this cultural phenomenon. You had to wait till the next season to find out who shot JR. Turned out it was his former mistress, his sister-in-law. So that's who shot JR. I was 10. By the way, 350 million people watched the episode. One of the most famous cliffhangers in TV history. So now you know the history. You have the context, okay? Who shot JR was a big deal. Dallas TV show. Back in the day. It was on CBS, I think. All right, let's do a little punch in audio. We got coming up Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, to talk about Oregon State. And we'll go to Jake Trotter, ESPN.com, coming up at 4:43 to talk Oregon and Penn State. So we're going to hit the Beavers, then the Ducks. Let's do this.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio,
presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Andy Staples talking about USC. Same old for Lincoln Riley and the Trojans. Couldn't hold the lead, couldn't close. Staples.
You had another situation for a second year in a row where a Big Ten opponent had to get down the field on USC at the end of the game and just ran the ball down the field on them. It was Michigan last year. That was a little more dramatic, more obvious because Michigan had to get in the end zone. Illinois just has to set a field goal. But guys, at what point does Lincoln Riley's USC stop letting people just ram it down their throats?
USC unable to be physical at the point of attack, couldn't close, couldn't run the ball when they needed to run the ball. Illinois got him. Last second field goal. Lincoln Riley's seat, even though he had a great start and a dominating start to the season, his seat's starting to get a little warm. Paul Feinbaum talking about James Franklin at Penn State. He can't win big games. Here's Feinbaum.
Yeah, there's not much emotion in talking about James Franklin anymore, Matt, because it's become so repetitive. And how many times are we going to hear him say, yeah, I mean, this was our chance? I mean, it's just, it's unreal. And I think Oregon is a really, really outstanding team, and their quarterback play is elite. But, okay, that's pretty much the every year conversation, but you mark the game with the whiteout. This is your moment. And if you're going to be taken seriously, you have to deliver. So I say this with no emotion and with no glee, but it's getting really difficult to take James Franklin seriously anymore as a big-time coach.
Feinbaum now talking about running as a politician for a seat in the Senate in his state. Stay tuned on that. Maybe he'll find that adrenaline that he's been chasing. But James Franklin, think about the Penn State fan. I watched the Penn State fan during that game go through a gamut of emotions. They went from chanting, fire James Franklin, over and over, to, we are Penn State, when they tied the game 17-all in the fourth quarter, to going back to fire James Franklin after the game. He wasn't in a good place. He looked sick to his stomach at the end of the game when he shook hands with Dan Lanning. Speaking of Dan Lanning, he was emotional on the field after the win.
Unbelievable job, man, of our guys keeping their composure. We said this game's going to be about 1,000 cuts, right? Every cut matters. Every cut matters. And eventually hit the jugular. That was it right there. Unbelievable focus. Our quarterback is an absolute all-star. Our team, special, man, special.
Dan Lanning was all kinds of fired up. I love the way you put it, Steven. He looked like he would hug you or fight you or scream at you.
Something. He wanted to do something to you.
And
all at one time. It was so good, John. And you know what? I've grown up in Oregon my entire life. I've never been a Ducks fan. Dan Lanning has me thinking of I should be a Ducks fan. That's how much I like that guy right now. I can't do it officially because, you know, it's just out of principle now.
Do you have a man crush on Dan Lanning?
Kind of I do.
Wow.
He's a gambler. The emotion,
you'd hang out with Dan Lanning.
I could hang out with Dan Lanning all day.
The Oregon radio call of the win.
See what Allard does here. To his right, Singleton. Motion man comes over. Allard, gonna throw. Steps back, swings it down. It is intercepted! Oregon pick! Ducks win! Ducks win! Interception by Dylan Thieneman. That means Penn State can't answer the score, and Oregon has ended it with an interception in the second overtime.
Second overtime, Jerry Allen on the call. That's how it sounded in the state of Oregon. How about in Pennsylvania? Here's the Penn State radio call.
Allen now. Penn State down 6, 30-24. Motion toward us by Pena. It's going to be Allen. Back. Throws. Wheel route. And it's intercepted, and Oregon's going to win it. Intercepted by Oregon, and they win it. Dylan Thieneman.
Oregon wins it. A lot of credit to the defense. Dante Moore had a day, though, didn't he? Here's Joel Klatt talking about Oregon's QB.
The calm and poise that we saw from Dante Moore on Saturday night in front of that environment
was remarkable. This was the biggest environment that he's ever started a game in front of by quite a margin, I would just say. And I know that there's been some good ones, but this is a different animal, as we all know. He handled the operation of that really well with the offensive line. His poise throwing the football down the field, his poise in all of those fourth down efforts where he had to carry the football, he had to scramble. He was terrific. He made great throws. He made easy throws. He threw with touch. He drove the football. He did it all. He had answers. Dante Moore proved that he is on a very short list for the Heisman Trophy.
Dante Moore on a short list for the Heisman Trophy. There were also 18 NFL scouts in the press box. I know. I was rubbing shoulders with them. They were watching. Here's Todd McShay talking about his NFL potential.
Oregon quarterback Dante Moore didn't have the best game Saturday night, but he's going to be the best quarterback in college football the second half of the season. And people will say to me, what do you mean he didn't have the best game? What do you want? Are you on drugs? He was 29 of 39, 248, three touchdowns, no interceptions. Ran for another 35 despite some sacks. Delivered in critical moment. He did. He did all those things. He was awesome. I watched him. I'm like, he could be even better. He's going to get better. And that's frightening. And he has been nothing short of brilliant this.
It is not frightening, Todd McShay. It's encouraging and interesting. Look, Dante Moore was good. The best part of Dante Moore was he made the best play most of the time. He didn't make a bad mistake. He stayed within the offense. He was emotional. He ran the football and helped beat Penn State with his legs. There will be bigger challenges, but let's not go the route of these national pundits who are going, Dante Moore was incredible. Dante Moore could go number one overall. He played really well. He gave his team a chance to win. He was a great leader. He showed a lot of emotion, a lot of focus. He is the co-conference player of the week. He helped Oregon beat Penn State. That's great, and it's encouraging because, you know, we had questions about Dante Moore going into the season, but there's a lot of ball left to play. Coming up, Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz. We're going to talk about the Beavers and the decision by Trent Bray to stay with his special teams coach. After that, immediately after that, we'll go to the national look at this Oregon-Penn State game with Jake Trotter, ESPN.com. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Windsor the hole. Smith's kick. It's blocked. Houston tries to pick it up. Time expires. We go to overtime in Corvallis.
Why not?
Hand off to Hatcher. He needs the 15. He does not get it. Houston ball.
Says again from 24.
And Houston in overtime comes away with the win.
ESPN broadcast, there you had it. Here's how it sounded on Beavers Radio.
The snap is a little high. The kick plays down, and the kick is up and good. And the Houston Cougars rally from down 14 in the fourth quarter and defeat the Beavers in overtime. 24-yard field goal. Houston goes to 4-0. The Beavers drop to 0-5. Final score in overtime. Houston 27, the Beavers 24.
There it is, Mike Parker. Sounding a little dejected, and understandably so. Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, gonna bring the energy up. I get Parker. That's tough. That's tough for the fans. How is Beaver Nation doing, Angie?
Oh, they're, you know, the first couple days are always the toughest. They're pretty down, but they were hoping to see a coaching change at some level this weekend. Didn't see it, but the schedule gets hopefully a little easier, and hopefully the Beavs can get some rally around some wins, because there were some positives and some improvements this week.
Well, I think it was their best, dare I say, all-around performance. You know, aside from the field goal kicking, they should have won this game, but they don't win it. Better to have loved and lost or never loved again, or better to have been close and lost or get blown out. That's kind of the feeling that I have. Why isn't Trent Bray making a change here? He comes into his introductory news conference today. says there will be no changes. Why do you think he's not making a change?
Well, he says it's because of the players, and he wants, you know, he's always looking at things through the lens of a player. I don't know, honestly. I hate calling for people's jobs. I think that's especially midseason. However, the body of work that we've seen from special teams has, you know, it's lost the Fresno game, it lost this game, and has been instrumental in hurting the Beavers in the other three. So I think that is one, too, that you could make a change and it wouldn't affect the players as much. I mean, a lot of teams don't even have a full-time special teams coordinator. So I think Beaver fans are just kind of out for something at this point. I mean, you have some that are ready to blow up the entire program. You have some that expect Ryan Gunderson and Jamie Christian to be fired. But I do think at some level, making a change as a special teams coordinator would be warranted at this point.
Jamie Christian is the special teams coordinator. What do you know about him as a coach? And I look back and he's coached at other places that seem to have had success while he was there. What's different at Oregon State?
Yeah, I don't know. He's moved around a lot. So that always makes you kind of wonder as well. But some bad luck. I mean, and you can always point to, I know the first after Fresno, I think Coach Bray said, well, players have to make the plays, which that to me harkened right back to the Gary Anderson kind of
yes.
thought process. But my feeling is when it's, yeah, mistakes happen, absolutely. But then when it's continual, that's when you need, as a coach, you need the coaches to kind of step up and be like, okay, what can I do different? You have people that want, you know, Trent Bray. My feeling on the whole thing with Coach Bray is he's a first-time head coach. You have to give him some grace, right? You have to, I mean, everybody makes bad coaching hires. Coach Smith made some questionable hires. He changed things. But where I think it gets tough is, and this is where I'm waiting to see what Trent does. This being the CEO is the toughest part of being a head coach. And every head coach, John, I know you've talked to head coaches over your career. Every head coach I've talked to said the worst part of their job is the personnel side of it, the hiring and firing of people, especially firing. They hate doing it. They become family with these guys. But that's where the good head coaches and the bad head coaches differentiate themselves. The good head coaches have to make those tough decisions.
Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, is our guest covering Oregon State. Look, the season and the schedule gets easier. How soon do they need a win to sort of change the momentum and start to change the narrative? Because there are winnable games on this schedule, particularly how they've played against Houston and Fresno State. You know, this team probably should be 2-3.
Absolutely. And Cal was, you know, you could go back and argue Cal was some more self-inflicted wounds that could have maybe bounced that way too. So yes, the schedule was not pretty and not good for Oregon State. I think the one piece that they needed a win like a month ago, John, but you know, this week going on the road across the country is not going to be easy. But I think the one thing I take from this is the fact that the team doesn't seem to have given up and Coach Bray has not lost the locker room, because I thought that could be really, that could easily go sideways, especially watching how they performed at Texas Tech. I worried about that. You know, there looked to be some infighting going on. There was some finger pointing. They regrouped, and Oregon, they played a really solid half against, you know, one of the top teams in the country on the road. And then Houston is a good team, and they dominate it for all but the last 6 minutes. So, but it's about finishing. It's about that killer instinct. And so I do think there's hope, just for the sole fact that the locker room still seems to be fighting.
This, you know, this question about Trent Bray is a good one. And I think you point to, hey, the CEO part being the hardest part. You know, certainly I had my questions about Bray at the start of the year. I also know, gosh, this is an independent schedule. It is a very unusual season. You know, it's hard enough to take over a program. Then I compound it with, hey, they went to the state legislature and they asked for $10 million. They're going to go back to the state legislature and ask for $10 million. They got to be really careful about the optics of how they spend money. How much of this is on Bray in your mind? How much of this is circumstantial on your mind when you look at the 0-5 start?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think some of it's him learning. I think he did show this offseason he was willing to make some changes and you know, bring in Coach Akey and Coach Kreiner, some veteran coaches to kind of help some, you know, maybe some of his inexperience. That you can't say he doesn't have passion. You know, that sitting through that press conference after the loss on Friday night, you could feel his disappointment and his emotion. I think he's learning on the job. I mean, like any first-time head coach, and it's been unfortunate. There's talent on this team. You know, I see people talk about, is this the, you know, this is the first time Oregon State's been 0-5 since 96. I was there in 96, and there's a lot more talent on this team than there was on the 96 Beaver team. So hopefully, you know, they can get things shorter up. Like I said, the biggest thing for me is that he hasn't lost the locker room. He's only lost one recruit, one commit, so that speaks volumes. Not to say that there might not be others, but they're all, you know, I always look at, are they still communicating with me when I reach out to these, the commits? Mm. And that's usually a pretty good sign, right? That they're still bought in, they're still engaged with Oregon State, and they're all responding back each week. They keep me posted on their season. So that's usually a pretty good indication that they still are bought into the coaching staff. I saw changes on offense. You know, they brought in Tyler Moreno as a tight end to help shore up. And we saw Cornell Hatcher, who had some, you know, some flashes and, you know, average 5.5 yards a carry. So I still think it's way too early to say Trent needs to go, but I see your point about optics and the legislature and, you know, Beaver fans and in the lodge at Blitzer, they're actually, it went from, okay, everybody needs to go to, it's really kind of harkened onto a, you know, Scott Barnes needs to go before Trent Bray goes. So
the frustration with the AD.
Yeah. Frustration. And you talk optics, you know, the optics from Beaver fans is, here's Oregon State in a really bad situation with a brand new president who's never been a president before. Scott Barnes goes and gets himself a nice raise and extension. The optics of that look horrible, and now he's making twice what any of his new Pac-12 peers are making. That's, you know, optics-wise, Beaver fans aren't happy with that.
You got to win. He's also painted himself into a corner in men's basketball with Wayne Tinkle's contract, and so... certainly Barnes deserves some criticism there. They've got to find a way out of it. They get Appalachian State this week. Malik Murphy's hand has become a question. Is he going to be able to go, in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Bray said today he did not go yesterday. Today's been a question. You know, he hasn't gone today yet, so they're hoping to have him full speed Wednesday. That is a concern. I mean, not that he needs a lot of time. I mean, he knows the system, he knows, but... depending on what that injury is it just a bruise? Although, you know what, a bruised hand on your throwing hand could be detrimental. So, you know, they said Jabari Johnson would be next up, and then there's a battle for third, you know, who would be the next one up, whether that's true freshman Tristan Tia or Cal Guttridge. So, yeah, it's never easy sledding right now with Oregon State, but hopefully Malik is able to go and, you know, we see improvement continue with him.
If the recruits are still engaged, if the fans are frustrated, if, you know, obviously fans want wins, if the gift giving is threatened, you start to think about changes or what could be done. But Bray sticking with his guys to this point. Angie, is there a point, oh, and what, do you start to wonder about they've got to do something?
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought it was 0-5 and the way they lost, right? Those two blocked field goals. I thought that was super telling, especially when you saw how it happened. I don't know if you saw the last field goal that was blocked, but yeah, Houston was lined up three wide. You know, Oregon State didn't have a blocker for. So bad. It's just bad ways of losing. And that's, you know, if you're Scott Barnes or you're at Oregon State, the worry then is you're already losing. I mean, the fan support on Friday night was horrible. The students, hats off. Students showed up. They were. And from a TV perspective, my son was watching and said, Mom, it looks great. But looking around the stadium, it was empty. So you start losing fan support. You start losing donor support. I mean, it's just a big snowball effect, right? So they need a win. And, you know, if they could, App State's not going to be an easy one either, going, like I said, across the country. But I think they've shown fight. If they can continue to get better, come out there, then come home to Wake Forest. But, like I said, the psyche I have to think with this team is pretty on edge right now.
Yeah, Angie, I thank you for capturing it. Good stuff from you. Beaverblitz.com if you want to see Angie's great work and coverage of the team. Angie, I appreciate you making time. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much, John.
All right, next up, we're going to Jake Trotter, ESPN.com. He'll talk Penn State, Oregon. He was there in the press box. I talked to him before the game. Trotter coming up next.
To the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I was in the press box. Penn State, Beaver Stadium. Jake Trotter, ESPN.com, was there. He drew the duty of talking to James Franklin after the game. I want to know what he thought of the game and where's James Franklin's head and what he makes of Oregon. Jake Trotter joining us. How are you, man?
What's going on, John? Long time no see.
I know. Man, it was a long day. I felt like it was a really long day. I got there way too early to the stadium. I was there too long. But in talking with you, you saw this coming because I said, who's going to win? You said, man, I have seen this before. James Franklin loses this game. Like you sort of forecasted it. What did you see and what did you think as the game was coming up?
Well, listen, I mean, I've covered a lot of Penn State over the last couple of years since I moved back to college football. And there have just been these games where against top 10 teams, mostly, that they just cannot come up with the play they need to win, or they do a couple of curious things from a coaching perspective, or they have a strange game plan, or they make an ill-advised coaching decision at the end. Whatever you want to, take your pick, depending on the game. And I think Oregon game had probably a little bit of all those. They just cannot win this game. I mean, you're 1-18 against top 10 teams in the Big Ten since James Franklin is coach. It's not a coincidence. It's not a fluke. It's not an accident. It's a trend. And Penn State just has been unable to win this type of game. And I also, it wasn't just about Penn State. I mean, Oregon hadn't played anybody. Oklahoma State's terrible, so on and so, Oregon State. But just kind of watching Oregon from a distance the first month of the season and knowing what that program is about. And I was in Eugene for the Ohio State game last year. I just thought that they would come in there and play well. And I really was already, and now more than ever, a believer in Dante Moore, who was super impressive. I mean, take the throws and the runs and all. His poise was really striking. Never was jumpy, never was indecisive. He went through his progressions on every play, was accurate with the football, and never looked rattled. It was kind of the opposite of what we got. I was at Ohio State, Texas in the opener with Arch Manning, where from the jump, he was indecisive and rattled. So I think the combination of all those factors is why I thought Oregon was going to win the game. And sure enough, big mistake late was the difference. But I think even before that, just Penn State couldn't get anything going offensively. I thought they came out in the first quarter just doing a lot of goofy stuff instead of running their offense, which I've seen them do before. And they made a pretty furious rally at the end, but wasn't enough. And I think Dante Moore and company deserve a lot of credit for weathering that storm, because Penn State had all the momentum going into overtime, especially after they scored the touchdown on three plays in the first overtime. And Oregon's like, all right, well, we're just going to answer. We'll score again, and then we're going to pick you off to win the game. So super impressive by Oregon. And until Penn State wins a game against a top 10 team, you just can't pick them to do it. You can't do it.
Jake Trotter, ESPN.com, is our guest. Oregon's defensive front held up better against the run than I thought they would. They were imposing, particularly in the first half. You've seen Texas. You've seen Ohio State. You've seen these teams. How does Oregon match up against the best in the country in that way?
Well, I think better than maybe we would have thought, given some of the guys they had to replace, whether it was Harmon or, whoever. But again, like if I'm Penn State, I go into that game running the football between the tackles. And they just did not do that until the fourth quarter. And I thought that was another thing that was puzzling, is they just didn't really, test Oregon's front stopping the run the way that they, when you've got two backs like that and you've got an offensive line you believe in and, you want to get your quarterback in some positions to succeed. I think that, Franklin didn't come out and say that, but I think that he was hinting at, they just could not set up third and two. And that was a big difference in the game where, Oregon had third and two, fourth and one a bunch, and Penn State had third and seven, third and nine a bunch. And I think part of it was, they couldn't establish the running game against Oregon. And also, they just didn't try to for a lot of the game. So, again, that kind of gets into some of the game planning, which I didn't really understand. But, yeah, credit Oregon. They did phenomenal job against Singleton and Katron Allen. And at no point did it feel like those two guys, at no point did it feel like they were impacting the game that Penn State really needed them to win.
Impressive win on the road for Oregon. A lot of tears on the field. Dante Moore's crying. Dan Lanning's, looking like he's got glassy eyes. It wasn't quite the celebration that they had last year in that first game against Ohio State, but I do worry about the length of this season. Can you maybe speak to that a little bit about how you have to pace yourself, how the wins at the end and how you're playing at the end matter like they matter in the NFL now? And, there's a lot of ball to play here.
Yeah, and Oregon should know that better than anyone. They had the phenomenal regular season last year. They win the Big Ten title their first year in the league, and then, after the layoff, they go to the Rose Bowl and just get obliterated by Ohio State. And so none of that really matters as much when you don't play your best ball when it matters the most in the playoff. It's their schedule's interesting. They have a bye this week, right? I think they have a bye.
Yeah, they're on the bye, and then Indiana.
I was going to say they have Indiana coming to town. So it works out. You get this big win. You can kind of take a step back and, reevaluate a few things, heal up a little bit, because that was a, physical game, emotional game. And then you've got a game Indiana team coming to town that, is better than people thought. They had a lot of good players coming back from last year. So I think that, some people maybe overlooked them because they didn't have Curtis Rourke, but Fernando Mendoza is playing as well as any quarterback in the country. That includes Dante Moore. In fact, I think those two guys right now, probably 1 and 2 in the Heisman conversation with John Mintier, with the hand injury. So, if you get through this Indiana game, you look at the rest of the schedule, and I see a lot of winnable games. I mean, Rutgers, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, USC certainly isn't, intimidating. And then you go, to Washington for the rivalry game. So you want to win every game you can, because you get the bye, especially now with the reseeding, getting the top seed is going to matter more, because you're not going to have to play an Ohio State that doesn't win the Big Ten, but is still maybe the most talented team. But you do want to peak at the right time. So you can win all your games and still play your best ball in December. But I do understand, you don't want to be dominant in October and then kind of, fade out in December.
Last year we saw Ryan Day survive losing at Oregon, losing the Michigan game. People are calling for his head. I know you went and spent some time in Columbus with Ryan Day in August and wrote this great piece on ESPN.com. What did you learn in there that maybe coaches should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I think that, for Ryan Day, obviously, I don't think people, Ohio State fans, realize how much he cares and how much this affects him, and how you have to have, people in your corner to help you with the emotional and, the strain that you go through. I think the most interesting thing he said to me, I thought, was, because I was at the Michigan game, and it was such a bizarre, maybe the most stunning result of a game I'd ever attended. Like, I just had no... I couldn't game out a scenario in which Michigan won the game beforehand. And then obviously Michigan went out and won it. And you hear some of the jeers and the chants from the stands directed at him. And just the criticism nationally. And you had no idea like what they were going to look like going into that Tennessee game. But I think the one thing he said was, after they won the national championship, just how many fans he heard from that, the other side of it, of people caring. I drove through an ice storm to get to Dallas to watch Jack Sawyer run the return for a touchdown. I went with my, dad to the Rose Bowl, and we saw, Ohio State play its best half of football maybe ever. And, went down the national championship, and I'm always going to remember Jeremiah Smith catching the ball down the sideline. So I think he has a good sense of the fan base and what it means. And, he embraces all the criticism and the expectations with the Michigan game. I almost think that they'd be better off if they like downplayed it a little bit internally, because they lock up in that game. They're like not the same team that you see otherwise. But, to his credit, he understands all of it. And, I think like some of his players and assistants and people in the program you know, they don't think some of that stuff is okay. I mean, he had to have security posted at his house, for crying out loud. That just doesn't happen at a lot of places, you know, even some of the more fervent places in college football. But, you know, he owns all of it. He embraces all of it. And, you know, the way he looks at the Michigan game now is it's an opportunity for them. You know, imagine what it's going to be like if they do win that game. So, you know, we'll see. I think that they are, you know, just as legit as ever, even though it's a new team. And, you know, right now you can make the case that number one and number two in whatever order is Ohio State and Oregon.
Where's Penn State in your mind? And can James Franklin come back from this, or is there something broken there?
Well, I mean, clearly something is not right. How does he come back? I mean, you know, they play Ohio State November 1st in Columbus. Win that game, and then the narrative changes. But until they win that game, it's only going to balloon. And, you know, I was talking to someone after the Penn State Oregon game, and I was just like, you know, like they got to win one of these because the pressure only builds a little bit more with every loss. Like every time you lose one of these games, it just gets bigger and bigger. It's like the Michigan game for Ohio State. Like you lose, you know, three in a row, goes to four in a row. It's even magnified the next time. So I don't know what they can do to fix it. They clearly don't know what the answer is because it keeps happening over and over again. And as I said, like 1-18, that's just not a coincidence. It's not bad luck. It's just who you are. Until they win one of those games, it's going to continue to go that way. But they have an opportunity. And, you know, that's something I talked to Drew Aller about after the game. Like, you know, it's a long season. We're going to have an opportunity. He didn't single out Ohio State, but that's what he was talking about. And then I think they have I'm trying to remember everybody's schedule now. I think they have Indiana coming to when do they have Indiana coming to town? Let me call this up real quick. Yeah,
you get Indiana coming there November 8th. Yeah, back to back.
Yeah, so it's back to back. Yeah, back to back games where they have, you know, potentially top 10 teams. So you win both of those, you know, it changes.
Changes the narrative.
It's going to be like, yeah, exactly.
Jake Trotter, I appreciate you, man. I will see you in the press box. Thanks for your expertise, man.
Thanks, I'll see you down the line.
All right, there he is from ESPN.com, Jake Trotter. Penn State's got a big opportunity at going to Columbus and then getting Indiana at home back-to-back after that. But you got to wonder, did Oregon beat Penn State? Did it break Penn State? I think it's a question. We got the 5 at 5 coming up top of the hour. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football right here on the Bald-Faced Truth on 750 The Game. So much more ahead, and we will take it. We've been on a roll here. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Nobody likes a tie. Nobody wants a tie. I don't want a tie on Monday Night Football. I don't like a tie even in a soccer game. Everyone's like, ties are for soccer. No, they're not. Break the tie. It's very, very unsatisfying to me when teams tie. To be continued. Never. That's what a tie is. We're going to continue this later, or maybe we'll just leave it unfinished. You know how when someone starts a project, I don't know if it's in your household or a neighbor, they start a home improvement project and they don't finish it. Does it gnaw at you? Or if you leave something unfinished, does it gnaw at you? There's brain chemistry involved in this. I talked about it earlier in the show. It's brain chemistry. There is a resolution that we need. We get a lot of cortisol and adrenaline in our life. You need dopamine. And you get dopamine when you close the loop. Our brain dwells on this stuff. An open loop is not a good thing. It's why probably when Steven shot baskets, practicing as a young high school player or adolescent, I'm going to gather that you left the gym on a make all the time.
100% true. Yeah. As a growing up, you always had to end on a make. I don't anymore, but.
Yeah, why did you have to end up on a make? It has to do with closing the loop and getting that dopamine and getting the satisfaction of, yes, I'm in here working on my game. I might have missed some shots, but man, I made the last one. It's a make.
Yeah, and what if I never shoot again? I'll end on a make.
End on a make. I was playing pickup basketball when I ruptured my patellar tendon in my right knee. I'm telling you, I was in agony. But I looked up with a little joy to watch that layup go into the basket and fall through the net as I crumpled to the ground.
Had you missed, would you have gone back and taken another shot?
I would have said, give me the ball back.
From the ground.
Everybody get out of the way. Let me take a shot from here on the ground. No, I don't know what I had done. My kneecap was about thigh high. So I was in a little bit of a shock situation on that one. All right, we have the 5 at 5 coming up here. And then we're going to lead you right into the Monday Night Football game here on 750 The Game. Across the network, you will get network programming wherever you may reside. All right, let's do this. The 5 biggest stories in sports. Let's go.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, John, throughout the Portland Trailblazers season, you can catch me on social media doing the Blazers Cliff Notes. I watch the games. You don't have to because, you know, sometimes the Blazers games aren't all that exciting. I've been doing that this year as well. I did it last year. But we're doing that for Media Day today because it was Trailblazers Media Day today. I watched the interviews, so you didn't have to. Trust me, you did not miss a lot. But a couple things did stand out for me at the Trailblazers Media Day. First one I want to play is Joe Cronin talking about the expectations of the team. I thought he said something very interesting at the end.
Because of last season, I thought we took a really nice step those last 41 games where not just in, you know, wins and losses and functionality, but in our quality of play, establishing our style of play, establishing our identity. I thought we did a lot of those things where we became really defensive-minded and understood that this is the way we need to play in order to win basketball games. So for us, I want to see us just continue to make those steps. You know, we've got big bets on over a handful of young guys. Those guys need, some have popped more than others. They all need to collectively keep improving.
Some young players, they got some big bets on big seasons for Scoot Henderson, who is actually hurt right now. Shaden Sharp, I think, for them. He's talking about them specifically. And then this one from Dwayne Hankins, talking about ticket sales and how actually good they are was very interesting.
For us on the business side, it's been incredible. Great second half to the season in terms of ticket sales. We hit all of our revenue goals. We got to 91% season ticket renewal, which is great for us. And then we're fifth in the league right now in new season ticket sales. So fans are excited. They're on their way back, and all that's been fun.
Ticket sales are crazy good for the Blazers. The Blazer market is so desperate and wants a winner. They just love the Trailblazers. They're going to buy in no matter what it is. Any glimmer of hope, they are back in. So Hankins, excited about the ticket sales. Young players, big bets. They got to have some big seasons.
I need more context because I need to know what fifth in the league, what's the net number of new season tickets? And what does, if they're at 91%, what does losing 9% of your season ticket holders do to you as a franchise? What's the net number? Are they positive or are they negative for season tickets? There's some stuff left out of that equation. They're peddling hope. They're peddling optimism. That's what Media Day is about. It's about we've done this. We're so much better. We're well positioned. If I'm a Blazer fan, though, I'm curious more about this Tom Dundon ownership bid, and is that going to really be inhibited by the lawsuit that has been filed by another group that apparently made an offer? I mean, it's nothing's easy. I'm at this Oregon Penn State game, and I got national media members going, "What's going on with this Blazers sale?" And I'm like, "It's the Blazers." Are we on three now?
We're two. That was just one.
Oh, you gave me two things in number one.
Yeah.
Number two.
How many items will we get in this one?
A couple, actually, because Major League Baseball season is coming to an end. Now the playoffs are starting. The regular season over. Playoffs start tomorrow. Blue Jays are the one seed in the AL. They'll take on the winner of the Yankees-Red Sox series. That should be a fun one. And then the Mariners, they're the two seed in the AL. They're going to take on the winner of the Guardians-Tigers series. While in the NL, the Milwaukee Brewers, they got the one seed. They will take on the winner of the Cubs versus Padres. And then the Phillies were the two seed. They take on the Dodgers or the Reds. Playoffs do start tomorrow. Quadruple header starting with the Tigers at the Guardians. First pitch, 10:08 Pacific time a.m. Day full of playoff baseball. Pretty awesome. Can't wait to watch it.
I'm excited for playoff baseball. I'm excited for the Mariners series. No game number 163s, though. Baseball got rid of that with getting rid of introducing tiebreakers that are a lot like the NFL. and then expanding the wild card round. And so people are going, why no game 163? It used to be really exciting. Winner take all. Nope. TV, ESPN in particular, wanted the rights to these wild card games and said, hey, we want these longer series and more of them instead of having game number 163. So people may say, hey, what happened to those games? Well, they went to a tiebreak system, but the wild card round is on. Wild cards are always dangerous as well. And the Mariners sitting pretty, I think, in the American League. Are they the best team in the American League?
Favorite in the AL, favorite in the American League.
They're the favorites now. You could have had them at like 6.5 to 1 just a couple of months ago. Here they are as the betting favorites. Go Mariners.
Number three.
That'll be fun.
We now know who will be performing at the Super Bowl halftime show, the Apple Music Super Bowl halftime show, and it'll be Bad Bunny. This marks the first time a Latin artist performed solo with the show's history. Of course, in 2020, Jennifer Lopez and Shakira did a dual performance, but Bad Bunny, born in Puerto Rico, so technically an American citizen for people that are mad about that. Bad Bunny, he primarily sings and records his music in Spanish, so there's a lot of, I guess, fake outrage because it might be in Spanish. He does occasionally sing in English as well, but he has a total streams reaching over 99.6 billion as of September of 2025, so he's the most streamed male artist in history. Very popular guy. I can't say I know much of his songs, but I've seen some videos of him like performing and in front of crowds. Look pretty crazy, so I'm a little excited about that one.
So do you have a little Bad Bunny music?
I don't know. I should have pulled some.
Yeah, we'll pull some next time. No Taylor Swift. That's
he's in Happy Gilmore 2 also.
Yeah, he'll headline that show. I think the NFL knows what it's doing. Probably couldn't get Taylor Swift, and they're going for the king of Latin trap here. You know, they're bringing in a guy who's going to bring
outrage out there.
Going to bring in a lot of new audience. Okay, and it's the one show that you don't have to program to the audience that's already in the room. And in fact, the NFL goes out of its way to counter program the halftime show. What do they want to do? They want to bring in viewers who aren't already going to be there. And so, yeah, you're going to get outrage always. I think by design.
Number four.
Well, the Ducks got the big win in Happy Valley at Penn State, and now the new AP poll, they move up to number two, not quite to number one. Ohio State, with their win in Seattle against Washington, they stay at number one, but the Ducks do jump Miami, who drops a spot to number three. Ole Miss, the big-time maneuver, they win. They move up 9 spots to number 4 in the nation. Oklahoma, without John Mateer, they're number 5. Penn State falls to number 7 in the polls. The Ducks' next opponent, Indiana, they won on the road, won at Iowa. They are number 8. So another big game for the Ducks heading up in 2 weeks.
I start to look at the group of teams that could win this thing. Ohio State could win it all. I think Oregon could win it all. Miami's interesting. Ole Miss looks really good. I think those are the top 4 to me. Those are the top 4. Are we on 5 now?
Yep.
Okay, moving on.
Number 5.
Then we have a quadruple header in Major League Baseball tomorrow. We got a double header Monday Night Football right now. The Jets and Dolphins are playing a game which nobody cares about because it's 0-3 versus 0-3. But Bengals-Broncos right here on 7:50 the game after this show. Broncos and Bo Nix, 7.5-point favorites at home against Jake Browning and the Cincinnati Bengals. And
give me the Broncos.
Okay. That'll wrap up week number 4 in the NFL.
Yep, there it is. Give me the Broncos all the way. Great show today. Great energy. Great calls in hour 1. Appreciate all the listeners who called in. I love everybody who makes this show part of their day. You can, of course, read me and find me at johnconzano.com. You can find me on Instagram. I'm on the gram. And TikTok. Yes, I am, but I'm not doing any dancing videos. I'm just talking about football on there.
That's right.
Maybe we'll get to the dancing later. All right, the Bald-Faced Truth, not here for a long time. Just a good time. We'll be back tomorrow.